guys. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper.
This is Joe Bob Briggs.
This is Jeffrey Combs.
Hey, this is Scotty in from Anthrax.
Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau.
Hi, this is Doc Bradley. You're listening to Quality Time.
You're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Broadcast.
And you're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Podcast.
I'm saying this under duress.
You better keep listening or I will tear your soul apart.
I sell these to guys in prison all the time. They love it.
The trick is when the room gets tossed, there's no titties, but you turn it upside down.
Confiscated! And it works as a shiv as well.
Yeah, is this...
You know how much fun that would be to stab somebody and, like, as you're killing them, you're just like, oh, look, I can see a titties on the pen. Ah, this is a good pen. I'm gonna keep this one.
You know, the only thing that reveals
The
only thing that reveals the nakedness of the pen is actually human blood, though.
Jesus.
Wow.
Okay, it's warmth. I'm just kidding.
You're speaking my language today, Jeremy. I'm all about it.
I don't really know much about science, but seriously, it's the warmth of human blood, not just the human blood. So
classic.
Because when the blood gets like cold, it doesn't see the nakedness of the pen.
That makes sense. No, I see where you're coming from with that.
I'm learning lots more from Degrassi Tyson, so.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, is that who you're referring to?
Yeah. Well, that's his boxing name, so.
I thought you were just watching the show Degrassi High. I'm a bigger fan of that. Welcome to Quality Time, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us here once again. My name is Eric Woodworth, your host. I'm joined by my brother Jeremy P. How are you, sir?
Don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who is joining us on the program?
It is me, the MC from Cabaret.
The MC from Cabaret. Fitting, because he's in our movie. You're talking about Mr. Joel Gray, I believe his name is?
Yeah, welcome.
Yes, that's very, very solid. I've never seen the movie Cabaret. Are you familiar with it, Christopher? Also, let me introduce our guest, because I think Ashley's not back quite yet, but we'll get her. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Our other guest, I was clicked over, and I saw that you were gone before, and now I clicked back. Let me also introduce the very lovely, very talented, my other co-host, Miss Ashley Pontius.
Oh, hey, Daddy.
Hi. Have you seen Cabaret, Ashley?
I have not.
Neither
have
I.
Am I a bad person?
No, Jeremy just makes references as if they're like common knowledge all the time and does no type of, you know, background work to let us in on the joke.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite show tune when I'm alone and think about how I'm like not a man anymore.
That makes sense. I like that.
And how
that
my wife
to me.
And how my wife hates me and she should really divorce me.
Well, I mean, we all agree on some things, you know.
I was gonna say, the country may be divided, but we're all on the same page in here. You know what I mean?
Hey. And our special guest this week, returning, I believe this is his third installment on the show, Mr. Chris Lawrence. Chris, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I'm just going to do a quick correction. This is my fourth installment on this show.
Is it your fourth? Because you've been for The Crow, yeah. Of course. You've been for The Exorcist 3, and then this. What's the other one that you were on?
Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
God, yeah. You've been on some classic eps here, brother. I keep forgetting. Yeah. Mm.
0.0.
Well, that's good, man. How have things been, Chris? How's your 2021 going so far?
So far, you know what? slow news couple of weeks, man. Everything seems normal and everything seems like the country's fine. We're great.
We finally healed, you know.
Yeah, we're everything's great now. We're back together. It's the end of the Matrix where the architect and the Oracle come together. There's a beautiful sunrise. Everything's great now. They totally
fuck.
I would watch the lady from the Matrix if she was alive. Now, are you getting the new Oracle or the old Oracle?
You got to get the newer Oracle. The older one that would raise a lot of
necrophilia type things.
Necrophilia problems. Yeah,
That's never bothered Jeremy.
I'm pretty sure it was Wanda Sykes, and they just blue screened her.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
oh my god,
up?
what if it's Wanda Sykes as the Oracle and the architect is Larry David and it's just a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode and she's calling him a motherfucker and he's just like, what are you talking about? I'm not racist. Like, it's just the whole thing.
And he only uses the N-word a lot during sex.
Yes, you know, as a gentleman would. You know, speaking of Wanda, I was watching WandaVision last night, and I know you guys haven't seen it yet, most of us here. This isn't really a spoiler, but the whole first two episodes are in black and white, and I noticed that when Vision, they show Vision, who's normally like green and red, but when it's being filmed in black and white, it just looks like he's wearing blackface. Like, is it just me that he looks, maybe...
He looks like Sidney Poitier in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. And I was like, what is this? Wakanda Vision? Get out of here. That's I took us on that ride just for that joke, guys.
Which is the reason why America was so racist, because we only saw in black and white.
That is true. You couldn't see the beautiful hues of green and red. That's what we were missing out
actually,
on.
Actually, Jeremy,
time.
Actually, I think that's okay because I don't see color either.
There we go.
Are you really colorblind?
No, but it's a pretty good Counting Crows song and a pretty good sex scene in Cruel Intentions.
You just see like a big old thing of dots and like it's all doesn't say anything in there, but it's actually
I fail that test every time I go to the eye.
It's actually a sailboat with a camel having sex on top of it in the dots.
Yesterday, folks, I went out to do a podcast, another podcast out in Dundalk, the wonderful city of Dundalk. Smelled like a it was a nice winter day, the smell of shit in the air. I went to a wrestling school to do the Happy Hour podcast with Ray Chance and his folks, and I just wanted to quiz you guys to see if you guys could get this. A, B, or C, okay? Was his co-host, I want you to guess his co-host's name, okay? And I'll give you an A, B, C. A, was it Reno Williams, not Remo like our movie, but Reno Williams, A. B, Psychotes, or something like it, like the word Socrates, but with psycho in it. Or C, Christopher Lawrence. A, B, or C?
I'm going to go with B.
B, okay.
I'm going to say Walt Ostrowski.
Walt Ostrowski, going with the D option. I like that. I like that.
I know it's not offered, but
I'm going with Socrates.
Socrates. Well, you are correct. It was Socrates. It was the psycho, and he did not look Greek at all. I'll be honest with you. And
sounds like a good name for a stripper.
Yeah.
I was about to say, Socrates, be like, she never fully commits to what she's offering you. She's like, I might give you a lap dance. I might not.
And then she just walks away with your $50.
Yeah. And then
yes.
And then he goes to fuck a young Greek boy, which is the custom at the time.
Again, like how would you know if he was Greek though? Like what would give him away if he was Greek? Would he be like just eating hummus during the whole podcast?
Yeah,
or, like,
he was
spraying you with Windex?
Yes, there was a lack of hair, his Aryan features. There was a lot of things that didn't look very Greek about him. I'll give you that.
Whenever you suck his dick, he comes to Zeke's.
Yeah. Yes.
He's like, no, you say it, Yiro, Yiro.
I will say, though, this guy, Socrates, he was very, very nice. He was very kind to me, but he definitely had that, like, I wrestled for 20 years of my life. Like, his spine was just one fused chip at this point. Like, he couldn't move like this. He's like, man, I got all the discs. Every disc in my back is just one thing now. He's just one solid spine.
So he pretty much looks, he's pretty much dressed like George Clooney in the movie 300.
Yes, yes. He had the posture of that from the dad of dinosaurs. It was very strong back, strong fused back. So that was fun. I mean, that was my weekend. Anything else new happening in the world? Not much.
God, I hope not.
Ashley, before we jump into too much of tonight, do you have any honest ash to share with us?
Sure.
Okay, well, here we go. Oh, and it's about that time again for another segment of Honest Ash. And here's Ashley Pontius.
Oh, hello, listeners. I wanted to share with you about the time I was at a party, real sweaty, dancing to the beat, and I was having a particularly extremely heavy flow.
Oh, God.
And at one point, I felt something fall out of me. Ugh. And alas, it was my tampon. And I scooped it up immediately. And I thought no one saw, but the girl I was dancing with did. And she held my hand, and she looked me deep in my eye, and she goes, "We're bloody buddies now."
That is another... Oh, God. That was another segment of Honest Ash. Join us next week to hear about more of these fucking atrocities that is Ashley Pontius' life. God damn it. Oh, my fuck. Ashley, you don't live this life. This can't be real. What?
You don't put that Megan's Graves apartment.
Why? Did she put it on her OnlyFans? This is good content. You need to share this, then. There's somebody who's into it. It's not me, but... Oh, God.
Look, it is hard. It is hard to have a uterus. They do weird things. They are difficult to manage. I had no idea, you know? Just like Jeremy's nosebleed times 10. Like,
it was...
difficult. But then, like, I had no idea that was possible, and I was like, freaking out. And the girl, like, was so cool about it, but she called me her bloody buddy, and that stuck with me ever since.
Bloody buddy, we're best friends and having a friend. Well, Jeremy, you have a new song for next week.
That doll. My buddy, my buddy.
I was gonna go with the
kind of smells, and I feel like I'm in hell.
I feel like we should call up Tom Scalise and Tom Hanks to get bloody buddies together, where they pretend as if they're women, but every joke is just around bleeding. So
yeah,
that's what we need.
I like that.
Tom Hanks could pull that off. He could pull off anything, you know.
I promise, boys, I'll bring less disgusting truths about me next episode.
No, more disgusting.
Has Tom Hanks has Tom Hanks ever been a bad guy in a movie? I'm trying to think.
Oh yes, anti-hero in Road to Perdition. He was a freaking killer.
Yeah, but he's still the good guy in that movie. He's still the protagonist.
But that's the thing with these mob movies. It's like, I'm a good guy. I'm just paying the bills. Here, I'm going to shoot this dude in the back of the head with a .22. It's the same story about the Irishman. It's like, you know, it's like he works at a hardware. It's like working at a hardware store. They're like, yeah, you know, I was told I got to go kill this guy, so you know, I just went ahead and did it.
He's never been the antagonist in a movie, right?
Like, I'm going to say Two Smoking Barrels.
Yes, he has. Actually, yes, he has.
The one
circle.
Where what about the one with the Coen Brothers film where they're trying to steal shit?
Oh, the Lady Killers. That was a terrible film.
Oh, you're right. He is in the He is kind of a bad guy in the Lady Killers. Okay.
Actually, no, the Circle. Right. The Circle.
I've never seen the Circle.
Hermione's in it, and he's like a weird Bill Gates type character. Like, it's like a Social Network type thing, and he's like a Bill Gates type dude. Not the one with Susan Sarandon's husband. Tim Robbins played like a similar character in another family, but it was almost like the same idea. But yeah, he's a bad guy in that one.
You know what? He is the antagonist in Catch Me If You Can, too, if you think about it.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he's a good guy, but you're not really rooting for him to catch him, right? And you're like, oh, fuck. I don't want him to catch Leo.
Yeah. Well, I guess technically he's the bad guy in Castaway because he obviously did something to upset God.
Yeah. And he did fuck that. He did fuck that volleyball in its fucking blood mouth. So, yeah. No, I get
that. Thank you.
He was. Exactly. He's also pretty bad as Thanos in the Avengers, where he's like, I'm going to have to kill the half of the universe now. I'm Forrest Thanos.
Forrest Thanos. You know, Mom always said I was inevitable.
I have all the powers of the universe now. I can do anything I want.
Reality.
Mom always said genocide was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Have you seen my infinity chocolate gauntlet?
Jenny, I just gave you AIDS.
He gave Damn. Jenny AIDS. Oh man,
I played for Paul Bear Bryant in Alabama. This is the end game now.
Yeah.
That's when Star-Lord was really upset that he found out that Thanos gave his mom AIDS. Yeah.
Every time he blows somebody up, he's like, Captain America, you got no legs.
Captain America, you ain't got no legs. Then, no, it'd be better with the War then, Machine, right?
Yeah,
War Machine you ain't got no legs.
Then he goes, magic legs.
Mr. Stark Major, your magic legs.
And then after he snapped his fingers and half the population's gone, he's like, I'm pretty tired. I think I'll go home now.
Now what are we supposed to do? And destroy the universe?
It would be great, too, if Forrest was, like, the third person worthy of wielding Thor's hammer, just seeing this retarded man with a hammer go, like, that would make my day.
He's got that special strength. The kind that chokes puppies.
This retarded man has the heart and goodness of a child. He can wield all the mighty powers of Thor.
And then when he goes to pass it on to the next person.
What's the name of Thor's homeworld? It's escaping
Asgard.
Right, yeah. Can you imagine, like, Thor is like the what's his face, the dude with the curly hair against Vietnam? He's like, I'm talking about as fucking God.
What if
he's like trying to like talk to like Thanos about like destroying Asgard? He's like trying to get a oh my god, it's so amazing.
One of the things that
let's can the movie right now.
One of the things they don't really tell you about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, since it's been, you know, bought by Disney, is that originally the Asgardians, you know, the whole thing with their world being created was because they were really against gay sex. Very, very homophobic, which is why they called their world Asgard, because they were just trying to stop all of the universe's sodomy at all times. It's very interesting. I knew it was a joke that Jeremy would like the most, but because it's crippled him.
Can you imagine
the idea of Asgard?
Can you imagine, like, handing Sir Anthony Hopkins the script and be like, listen, you need to deliver the backstory on Asgard. You need to go ahead.
See, the frost giants were walking around raping all types of men, and we couldn't have that. So we formed Asgard, which was society's last hope for safe anal penetration.
Laufey tried to test me once, so I ate his liver with a nice Chianti and a can of fava beans.
All right, guys, that was the best I think we were going to get out of that. Jeremy, you wrote a song that has nothing with the movie we're doing tonight. Would you like to preface it in any way and share with us before we play this?
I've been contemplating doing this song for almost maybe 2 years now.
2 years? Oh my God. Wow. Okay.
And the juice has finally flowed, kind of like syphilis.
Okay.
And I think the song's actually too good for quality time, so I'm just going to go out on a limb.
Okay, I've set a new bar of lowness for what to expect from this.
And it's unbelievably long, too, so you might want to only play half of it.
Maybe I'll play a minute or two and also grab myself a beer in the meantime. which is like 20 feet away from me.
Of songs.
Okay, well, here we go. Here's Jeremy's song that he created, and let's give it a listen, and we'll, if you want to hear it in its entirety, if it is appropriate enough that it already hasn't been cut from the show.
It's only got the N-word like 100 times.
Oh, okay, well, we have a 99 limit, so I'll cut it after the first minute so we don't go over.
I know what's right and wrong. Jeez.
Here we go. Here's Jeremy's song of the week.
Lost my job, I lost my wife, and I got cancer, and lost my balls. I've got skeebies and lice crawling everywhere. I'm living on the street, but that's okay, 'cause I just saw the midgets. It's alright, 'cause I just saw the midgets. And I'm happy as can be, yeah. Midgets are happiness. Midgets are guardian angel showed me how much life is better when I wasn't around. Now I'm in a wheelchair, losing limbs to beats, erectile dysfunction. My mom won't even say hello to me, even my grandma. She hates me too, but anyway, just saw a midget, yeah. Now everything's alright, yeah. Just saw a midget, and everything's alright because midgets are happiness. Midgets are happiness.
Well, Jeremy, that was pretty good, man. I'm expecting, probably
Midgets Are Happiness.
That was actually one of your better composed songs, I'll say. It was nice.
Yeah, there was a lot of tracks. I heard a lot going on. It may have been a little overproduced, Jeremy.
I think I would have overproduced. I think you should have boosted the vocals a little bit more.
Yeah, I kind of drowned it out with a sweet guitar.
You were rocking on it though. I mean, this is some of your better work you've done there. I heard
the Wall of Sound influence there. R.I.P. Phil Spector.
Yeah.
And I throw in a joke in there about being raped 8 days a week.
Okay, well, then that makes sense. That's very much on brand for you.
I feel very seen by you, Jeremy. Thank you for bringing the plight of the woman into your song.
It's all about feminism, so.
That's what it is.
When Jeremy talks about rape, he only talks about man-on-man rape, though. That is
exactly.
He's that much of a chauvinist.
I'm fully against all women rape.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do it all for the bussy. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, let's get into tonight's movie. Man, what a treat. We're going over...
Oh, two! Woo!
We are going over... What to Say About This Little Film. Whew, 1985's Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins.
And ends.
No, apparently there was a sequel to this. There was
Prophecy.
No.
There is a sequel to this fucking flaming train wreck. Starring the great Fred Ward, who I think most of us probably know Fred Ward from the movie Tremors and the Tremors series.
Yeah. Is he also in Tremors 2?
Yes, he was in Tremors 2. He's also in the most recent Tremors, which I think are like the Snow Tremors or something. They're up to like 6 Tremors movies by now.
Yeah.
So.
Like 7. Yeah.
They're coming out with another one, I think.
Chris, why Remo Williams? Why does this hold a special place in your heart?
So without getting too, gooey,
emotional,
gooey, but What?
Without getting too emotional over it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, the year is 1997. I'm in the PX post-exchange with my dad in Newburgh, New York, in Stuart Air Base. And I'm just looking around for, you know, in the book section. Really, they had a Playboy section, too. But I was looking at the novels. And there's this novel, and it has this, like, it has a Nazi flag on it. And it has this old guy with like a
which immediately drew you like to that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously. And then I pull the book out, and my dad is standing over me with me, like looking at, and he's like, "Oh my God, the Destroyer! They still make these?" I'm like, "What is this?" He's like, "Oh, it's this book series about this guy who knows kung fu. It's like kung fu, but it's called Sinanju." Like, my dad just starts rattling everything off about it, and oddly, it was like book number 113 out of the series, and the whole, like, I ended up buying the book and reading it over the summer. But basically, in this book, Remo Williams takes on a bunch of neo-fascists trying to overthrow the government. What a weird idea, by the way. spoiler alert, at the end of the book, he punches the bad guy through the chest and rips his heart out. And that's the kind of kills that you get out of the Destroyer series. Anyway, but then my dad told me, "Oh yeah, they made a movie. The movie is pretty good, but not as great as the books." Like, that's, my dad pulled out the Moby Dick book is way better than the movie on Remo Williams.
I wouldn't have guessed going into this that you had read the book Remo Williams first before diving into the cinematic universe.
I read a Remo Williams book. Like, these are like, this is like a series of books that came out in like the 70s, like Pulp Fiction type books. Another series that was like a companion to it is a book series called The Executioner, about a dude named Mac Bolan, who is kind of like the Punisher. Like, his whole family's taken down by the mafia, and he ends up like having a war on the mafia. They still write those books called The Executioner.
Mac Bolan sounds like a white SoundCloud rapper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, you can check him out on Spotify.
Yeah, and Parler. Yeah, but anyway, so I ended up like subscribing to, like, when the books came out. Like, I had a whole subscription. I still have all the Executioner books. I was looking for the Destroyer books to show them. But at any rate, So I saw the movie a few times. You know, rented it on VHS or whatever. And then I saw it was on Amazon Prime a couple months ago, and I was like, "Yo, Eric, we got to cover this movie the next time I'm on." Hence, we are here now, right?
So
we're here now, and actually, here, hold on, real quick. I don't have the book with me, obviously, but here is the cover. You can kind of.
Oh,
see.
Wow! Look at that.
Yeah, that is Rainstorm number 112 of the Destroyer.
Jesus,
right there.
Chris, save some pussy for the rest of us. God.
Yeah. I probably got flagged for pulling a picture that has a Nazi flag on it. But, you know, that's, hey, you can find those on any street corner now. Those are time a dozen, apparently.
Yeah, so. You know, that's always it's always good. Now,
I always make sure that my face mask has a big swastika on it. But it's going the opposite direction, so it's okay.
Yeah, always drum going to the... Going to the right, never to the left.
Yeah. But still still with the red background and the big white circle around it, though. So
makes sense.
Exactly.
We actually have a Nazis R Us just down the street from me here in Pennsylvania. They're like, you can get your Aryan toilet paper, your hoodies, your commemorative towels. Like, get ready for the uprising. It's 50% off.
Everyone at that store is Chris Cooper from American Beauty. He's just collecting
Now, this movie has a pretty fun cast. Of course, we have Wilford Brimley, who makes an appearance in this film as Harold Smith. Kate Mulgrew, who will go on later to be Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager, right?
Yep.
She's in this film. A lesser-known actor in this, but Jeremy knows very well, is Joel Grey, who we mentioned earlier in this. And it's important to mention Joel Grey in this film because he is clearly a white guy who is playing an Asian man in this movie. I was reading up on some of the things in this. He was he didn't want to take the role, not because, you know, maybe it was offensive, you know, that I could play this. He was like, no, I just don't know any karate, and that was his reason that he didn't want to take the role.
Yeah.
And so he would go on this movie. He would be nominated as a best supporting actor Golden Globe for this film, as it, for this portrayal that he does, which we have many sound clips that'll be coming up later, so you can hear it in its all of its glory. But it also won a got nominated for an Oscar for special effects for best makeup, and the only reason it lost is because it was going up against Eric Stoltz in Mask.
Yeah.
So
dude, think about it. Didn't the principal from Kindergarten Cop, I always forget her name, she's like, you know, Helen, not Helen Hunt, but it's like Helen something. She won an
Helen
Academy
Mirren?
Award for playing what?
Helen Mirren?
No. Mm. She won. No, Linda Hunt. Linda Hunt won an Academy Award for, I think, The Killing Fields or something, where she played a Vietnamese man opposite of Mel Gibson. Okay, so this during the 1980s, it was not unheard of for people once again to be in yellow face. And keep in mind, R.I.P. Mickey Rooney in his in his fabulous turn in Breakfast at Tiffany's. So.
Like, I want to imagine they asked Joel Grey, like, where did you get the inspiration? Like, I'm a big Mickey Rooney fan. I loved Breakfast at Tiffany's, and I thought, you know what? I could bring this character to life in, like, Remo Williams.
The thing that pisses me off is, like, why couldn't they have gotten, you know, what's his face that played Lo Pan? Like,
yeah.
From they could have, he would have done a serviceable job.
Yes, they could have. There could have been a lot of people you chose. You could have chose the other guy from Big Trouble in Little Chinatown, the guy who's the good older guy, or the guy, he's also in
Tremors. He's in Tremors.
Yes, he is in Tremors. Tremors, and he's in Prince of Darkness as well. So
yeah.
You know, a lot of good John Carpenter films there. So
can I say who also doesn't know any martial arts?
Who's that?
That'd be Frank Oz, just the voice of Yoda.
Oh, okay.
Got him.
So,
but he can like lift like an X-wing out of like a swamp. So I guess that counts for something.
Movie magic. Yeah. That's what we're here for. But this whole thing is basically the idea of Remo Williams and the Destroyer is supposed to be the American version of James Bond, but a blue-collar version of James Caan. Real blue. James Bond.
James Caan.
Yes, James Caan is what I said, but James Bond is what I'm trying to... You know, it's hard to think of a different morning like this. So this movie opens up. We get to meet Remo Williams, who's still going by his God-given name, which is Sam, working the beat as a New York City police officer, losing money on a Knicks game when he sees two bums chasing another bum through the streets. He pursues them and realizes it's a setup and has to fist fight these three gentlemen, takes them out with a 2x4 pretty easily, and then goes to have a smoke in the car when he's finally rammed off of a dock by a truck that brings him to a watery grave. But we do see that there's two divers that immediately plunge in to go retrieve Sam. The next scene you immediately see is Sam's funeral.
That is why I feel more pride than sorrow. For Samuel Macon made the ultimate sacrifice. He did so willingly. And no man can hope to do more. His body may be returned to the earth, but his spirit will live forever.
So he gets his 21-gun salute, and we notice that the guy who pushed him into the water in that truck, who we'll learn very soon, is McCleary, is at the funeral seeming very pleased.
Am I the only one who like looked at his character and couldn't figure out why we had a black Inspector Gadget? I just didn't like. I know that we'll come to know his purpose, but it felt, for me personally, just felt so weird to be thrust into him, all like him showing up in the film and his involvement, because there's just so little given to us up front that the whole time I'm watching this go down, I'm like, huh, maybe this is just reparations.
Yes. Well, I love how many you know, stereotypical tropes are in this movie. So we have a magical Negro already that is already established, and we're going to have a mystic Asian soon. So we're going to get to that very shortly.
I love mystic Asian. Isn't that with Sandra Bullock?
Yes, yes, it's Sean Penn. It's a great film. So next, he wakes up in the hospital. We see Sam wake up in the hospital to meet McCleary, his new boss.
That's not me.
He wakes up and he says it's not me because they just shaved his mustache, which I also think is really funny, that he was just like, oh my God, I'm a different person now that I don't have a mustache, which is pretty funny.
It's what just like whenever, like in movies, you see them take the glasses off the girl and you're like, whoa, you were pretty the whole time.
Oh, she's all like, that. Starring Fred Ward.
Like, here's the thing. If they were going to execute this a little bit better, no pun intended, they could have used some of the prosthetic budget they used on Joel Grey and maybe given Fred Ward like maybe like a bigger chin or right. a bigger nose or something, just to be like, okay, yeah, like now we see it's a different guy. Like, we get it. It's not just the mustache. Like, but then
the idea that they gave him. They gave him plastic surgery to remove his mustache.
Yeah.
That kind of rocks. Like, well, let me
get, yeah, him, like, what if they gave him like an actual like nose from a proboscis monkey? So his nose is just absolutely humongous through the whole thing.
What if they gave, well, the other thing, like, the movie doesn't help people that don't know the book series, because they, you don't, you're wondering, why is this piece of shit being recruited into this super secret government? Like, he's just a beat cop. He's in his 40s. He's nothing special. Was he a Navy SEAL? Was he, you know, what was it with this guy that drove you? And he's also not in great shape either.
He had so, like, every, the thing that, why they picked him, and they, it, I read this actually in the special facts, is that he owned every Creedence Clearwater Revival tape. And they were like, yep, that was the thing that we needed. They were like, home on the bayou, a New York, what? Yes, you're hired. Yeah. You're blue collar.
They also mentioned that he doesn't have any family or any. Okay, so great. Okay, perfect. But other than that, they were like, and in the book series, by the way, he is actually framed for a murder and they fake execute him. That's what they do. And that's how Cure puts. So they make him not a hero by executing him. And then like, okay, well, now you have to work for us. Like, well,
the original Suicide Squad.
I have two thoughts about that. One, you seem to have a very certain type of film, Chris. Movies where people wrongfully die and come back from a revenge. What?
Right.
You've
on
got
brand.
A type. on brand. The other thing is, I don't know if you guys picked up on this while we're going through that whole conversation between the two of them in the hospital room. I was like, this is the original Hillbilly Men in Black. This is the conversation between Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith. Be like, we are behind the scenes. You don't know we're there.
Well, here,
you
let
have
me,
no family. You have no fingerprints.
Let me play the rest of this audio clip real quick here.
We did some work on you. Just your face. Thank you, nurse.
You better have had a damn good reason.
We did. You were ugly.
Who's we?
You've been recruited by an organization that doesn't exist. We needed someone, and you were the best we could find. Decorated cop, ex-marine, no family, no commitments.
Yeah, well, if I'm the best you can find, you're in pretty deep shit, pal.
Who the hell are you anyway? FBI, CIA, Salvation Army?
Who we are the people who got you by the balls, Remo. Besides, we need you. Our cops are corrupt, our judges bought, our politicians are for sale. Everywhere you look, slime is on the loose. You're going to be the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not get away with it.
Boom. Thou shalt not get away with it.
I love it. That is some, like, RuPaul's Drag Race shit. Be like, in the 11th commandment, thou shalt not get away with it. Okay, now booty.
Thou shalt be fierce.
Thanks.
Spill the tea, bitch.
Thanks, Mel Brooks, for dropping that extra five commandments. We would have known this the whole time.
Yeah.
So, I think they needed to have a cop that was more realistic to, like, real cops, and his name would be, well, first, being a real cop, his only way of killing people is by shoving pastries down their neck until they choke to death, and yeah, his name would be the Pastry Destroyer.
The Pastry Destroyer.
Can you imagine, like, the scene being different? Like, if this was real life, like, listen, the reason why we recruited you, Mr. Mark Furman, is because we believe that you are one of LA's finest police officers. You got OJ.
First, there was that moment when he realizes his new job. He's like, wait a second, I'm a cop. I could never kill people for a living.
He's like, wait, Mr. Furman, we need you to kill neo-Nazis. Wait, you want me to kill the neo-Nazis? Wait a second, hold on.
What? So Remo leaves the hospital and steals an ambulance.
Time out.
Okay.
Ambulance.
You're missing the greatest line reading of this entire movie.
Uh-oh.
When he goes, you changed my name to Remo Williams? And he's looking at the bedpan. He's like, yeah, we put a lot of thought into it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
that does kind of rock.
Now, does anybody realize this is follows the Cyborg series of naming characters after musical equipment like Remo?
Oh, you know, I didn't pick that up. But yeah, I guess, okay, I'll go with it.
How will Fender ever fight Gibson and Roland? Oh, no. Here comes Slinky Ball Strings. Oh, no.
I think that's episode 30. We're on, like, episode 200. But yes, the Cyborgs episode of the movie Cyborg.
Which how will we ever fight Rickenbacker?
Yeah.
Sorry, Eric. I didn't mean to interrupt. You were at the ambulance, by the way.
Yes.
Ambulance!
Bowl over how he gets his name.
I know. Don't worry. Listen, that's what the show's about. It's about being thorough. So
that is also how my parents came up with my name.
So he leaves the hospital, and you'll see a brief little cameo from the great Carl Winslow, if you notice, right? He is the ambulance driver.
Benjamin Johnson.
So
has he played the trio now? Has he played all three types of public service? Has he played not only a police officer, an ambulance driver? He's played a corrections officer in Ghostbusters.
Yes.
But has he played a firefighter? We got to find firefighter. Fill out the bingo card.
Okay. All right. I'm going to get in touch with his people and see if we can't get him put it on Ladder 50, the sequel to Ladder 49.
Ladder 50.
Or
sad thing is if you...
The reboot on Netflix of Backdraft called Black Draft, and we'll just have him be the Kurt Russell role.
That sounds like a porno.
The sad thing is if he comes on your podcast, he doesn't make any funny noises or anything.
Now you're thinking of Michael
Winslow.
There we go.
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
Man, you know what? Like I said last time, like, we don't need Joe. We are a self-policing entity. We're like that town in Portland. We are self-governing when we make a mistake on the podcast. Fix it.
Are there any good Urkel pornos?
Yes. Yes, there are. I know.
Did I fuck that?
All right. That one was good. That was worth the wait. Remo steals the ambulance, but McCleary's already one step ahead of him. He's got a gun in the back, so he's just been waiting, expecting him to steal that. So just to know.
That ambulance, too.
He's always one step ahead, right? So he drives them to their command center, which is a derelict part of town and a former national bank. We see the giant computer room. He's like, aren't these things supposed to be getting smaller? These are the small ones. And they get to meet Harold Smith, the big boss, played by Wilford Brimley.
I'm only going to say this once. This is a wonderful country, my boy, but our legal system doesn't work the way it's supposed to. I'm talking about people who roam the halls of power with impunity, who corrupt and subvert the very principles our Constitution exists to uphold.
Look, your friend already
talking about diabetes.
Why has he? Here's another one. Guard, protect, and cherish your land, for there is no afterlife for a place that started out as heaven. Charles M. Russell, Montana, 1926.
1926? That's ancient history, Dad.
Computer said you were a smartass.
You never heard of computer era?
Not this one. Take a look at that innocent little box, my boy. It's hooked to all those computers you saw downstairs. And every scrap of processed information in the United States comes through here. If it's out there, I can find it. Helps us keep track of the bad guys. Hell, I can find out the temperature of your ass in that chair if I really want to know. But it won't do everything. And that's why we got you here, Mr. Williams. You're going to help remove some of the filth in there.
I like that. That's nice. It's a whole lot nicer than kill or destroy or terminate with extreme prejudice. I mean, that's what you're really talking about now, isn't it?
I think he's got it, Mr. Smith.
That's exactly what we're talking about, Mr. Williams.
Well, suppose I say no.
Then you're a dead son of a bitch.
Okay, a couple things about Wilford Brimley here. One, I love that he's reprising his role from The Thing as a guy who's really good at staring at computer screens. That's number one, okay? Number two.
Typecast.
Yeah, he's being typecast. Number two, just I love that Fred Ward at one point calls him old man, and they're probably like 3 or 4 years difference age, which I think is very hilarious. Like those are my two takes on that scene.
The one take I have on this whole thing is one is, by the way, the computer is a thing in the entire book series. Actually, there's plots surrounding that computer. Number two, though, did they not pay Wilford Brimley to stand up at all in this film?
He doesn't. Every you're right. He's always seated. He's always
sitting
seated
in a chair. He's like,
can I draw my lines while I'm sitting?
Look, if you want me to stand up, my agent already told you that's going to be an extra $150,000.
I told you it's $80K, but I'm always seated in a rolly chair. Oh. You roll me to the next spot, I do the lines. I said no interviews. You know I'm diabetic. I get very angry sometimes, and I strike people.
Well, you know he.
Well,
Sorry,
no, go ahead, Chris.
Ashley.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know he only filmed this movie for like 3 days. You know that's exactly what happened.
Yes. I'm a big fucking deal. I'm Wilford Brimley, okay?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you guys need to stop picking on him for sitting down because you know he doesn't get good blood flow to his feet because the diabetes. He probably can't stay for very long. He's
going
to have to get one of them cut off.
I'm going straight from here to Cocoon where they have special power cocoons to keep me young.
So, next, they take him out to work for Remo out to his first job, which is to kill this guy in this office building, but is actually going to eventually be his trainer, Chun, this sweet, clearly not Asian man who knows karate. He goes and shoots at him, but very, in probably the queerest way possible, dodges all of his bullets, just like, ooh, ha, like it's almost like the scene in The Mask where he's, like, he does everything but, like, pull his legs up super high, like, ooh, like that. It is fucking great, man. I laughed so hard, and it's not fast, it's just like, ooh, I slowly dodged to the left to miss that bullet.
You know what, though? I gotta go back to the Asian face of this whole thing real quick. This is why Jennifer Grey changed her face. She's like, oh, if my dad can be Asian, I can get a new nose. And then you don't recognize her ever again.
God damn it.
But
he then whimsically beats Remo Williams' ass around the fucking apartment, eventually taking all the bullets out of his gun and going click, 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 click like this with them. And McCleary comes in to talk to Chun about Remo Williams' potential.
He is very slow.
Great.
His reflexes are pitiful, poorly coordinated. He is in wretched physical condition, impetuous. Ow. And clumsy. He moved like a baboon with two club feet. However, there is a feeble glint of promise in his eyes. I think I can do something with him.
And we're live again. Okay, so
it makes you wonder, like, why isn't Chun at all in on, like, the recruiting? Like, if that's the case, and Chun's like, I can't do anything with this guy, like, why don't they bring Chun along for the recruiting trips? And they're like, find me a guy, Chun. Who can you train? Who do we have to pretend to kill? Let's go and grab that dude.
But Chun, he listens to CCR. Didn't we tell you? We did all the background information that was necessary for you.
Well, I mean, come on, Chris. I mean, you love this movie. You know better than any of us. Chun doesn't have any freedom. What are you talking about? He's there against his will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. It's, he's supposed to be Korean, and Joel Grey is like, oh, he needs to be Korean? Well, I'm just kidding. Going to go with random Asian man. That's what I'm going to
do. There we are. So after we get to meet Chun, there's plenty more Chun to come. Harold is, Wilford Brimley's back in the office doing a little research on his computer screens, which is really just clicking and watching videos about their antagonist, Mr. George Grove. So here's a little of that.
George S. Grove, born Albany, New York, May 10, 1933. B.A., Electrical Engineering, Clarkson College. Served two tours, supply sergeant, Korean conflict. In 1962, founded Grove Industries, advanced weapons technology. Current projects, CD-18, surface-to-air missile. HARP, high-altitude reconnaissance probe, prototype for the Star Wars program.
In 1984, he made the song...
Investigation, corporate taxi...
Rock me, Amadeus.
1979, no charges filed. 1981, suspected bribery, procurement defense contracts.
So anyway, we find out George has murdered a bunch of people and has clearly gotten away with it. And if he's gotten away with it and the computer can't figure it out, we know he's good. So, McCleary...
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's the other thing about this guy. It's like, A, he's from Albany, New York, which... Wait, how many evil doers do you know that are from Albany, New York, number one, and like bad guys? And the second one is like, he went to Clarkson College. No elite Ivy League schools here, folks. Move along. None of these liberal bastions of freedom. We're going with Clarkson College, a very blue-collar school for our blue-collar villain, who is just basically another cog in the military-industrial complex working on Ronald Reagan's Star Wars project.
I like it. It's a lot of... This has everything but Phil Collins playing Land of Confusion in it right now. It is just... It's every 80s trope all at once. I love it. There's HARP. There's Star Wars. We're setting a wonderful table right here.
Well, I was going to say, you're almost correct, Eric, about the song, but it's actually everybody Wang Chun tonight.
And it got him.
So, McCleary then, oh, I'm sorry, Harold then does that, and then McCleary tells him how shitty his job is going to be here, and I have a little bit of that right here.
George, it'll be 2 minutes when you're not vivacious.
If the company can't get anything on Grove, then you know he's good.
Okay.
All I can promise you is terror for breakfast, pressure for lunch, and aggravation for sleep. Your vacations will be 2 minutes when you're not looking over your shoulder, and if you live to draw a pension, it'll be a miracle.
There you go. So he has a lot of good benefits working here. A lot of good benefits. Just constant fucking pressure.
He also gets every second videotape for free at Blockbuster.
He doesn't have to rewind when he returns them. That's good.
You also don't have to rewind.
We're going to pay you in Ponderosa buffet cards.
I like it. He works for an organization that doesn't exist, and he's like, wait, is this Bob's Big Boy? Have I been recorded into the Bob's Big Boy family?
Your Genesis games rentals will not be half price, though.
Genesis games are still full price.
That's correct.
There's some more training that he has because Chun is teaching him how to use his body as the weapon, and his body and his mind now will be his main weapons. But he does mention that he moves like a pregnant yak and paralyzes him with two fingers very, very easily. And we learn a little bit about his fighting style.
You have come into the care of Chun, master of Shinanju. Shinanju is a village in Korea where all the fighting arts were born. Kung Fu, Karate, Ninjutsu. They are all but shadows. Shinanjo is the sun. Most intelligent people know this already, but it is apparent to me that you know less than nothing. Pay attention. You did not ask to be white, so perhaps that is not your fault. You did not ask to be here. Perhaps that is not your fault either. So let us make this pact. I will train you for your first service, and then I will return to my country.
So he tells him some more about Shinatsu, right? Am I saying that right, Chris? I don't want to mess up the book translation.
Shinanju.
Shinanju. And he's a big, he loves Korea. He loves Korea so much that he actually says this right here.
You always talk like a Chinese fortune cookie.
Yep.
Chinese. The Korean is the most perfect creature ever to sanctify the earth with the imprint of his foot.
So he paralyzes him then and then unparalyzes him with a finger touch, right? But I will say,
Ashley, I'm sure when you watch this, you're like, God, if I had a nickel every time I was paralyzed with two fingers.
Well, this whole movie just made me so moist because, like, from the very beginning, whenever he is taking them down at the abandoned warehouse and he's like, spread them wider, wider, I was like, okay, like, I see you.
I think the most shocking is that this is the only guy that doesn't run a convenience store.
Yes, that is true. Oh, that is true. He's
dude,
like, you know, Koreans, we will leave Korea and then we will set up bodegas in places of color here, and then we'll call police on the black man in America. That is the
Michael
Korean
Douglas
way.
Will get mad at us for not giving him change when he asked for it, and we make him buy something, and then he starts falling down on us.
We will charge $2 for soda.
I will say that Chien is probably correct because a little known fact about this movie is that, you know, Shinatsu is real and later would be perfected as a completely different style and of Korean style. And that's right. It eventually becomes this.
Open Gangnam Style.
Yes, that's right. It becomes Gundam Style eventually.
So the other reason why this is such like a to my heart type thing, well, one, think about the subtext of Joel Grey calling Chinese people dogs
yes.
while an Asian face is
yes.
pretty damn good. And two, I'm actually a black belt in a Korean martial arts called Tangsudo Mudokwan.
Oh,
so
wow. Like, Jesus.
Yeah. You just made that up.
No. Chris.
All right.
I'm just as... Yeah.
Well, now I'm just going to stoke the flames of fire to watch you fight Mike Turpin now. That's where my whole life is now.
Oh, I'm getting, no, he can murder me. I'm not even, come on, look at me.
Wait a minute, though. That's fair. Next follow-up question. Would you fight Chris Restivo?
Oh, my God.
He has a
no,
black belt.
That would be considered a hate crime. I'd, like, be
hey.
Violating the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Hey, whoa. Do you know... Hey. You know Chris Restivo is a lethal weapon. He's a white belt in jiu-jitsu, so I need you.
You know what? No, I bet you he knows Shinanju, and he learned it in the back of the strip club.
It's very impressive. I've seen some of his moves, and I got to tell you, his finisher, which is the five-plate fist fight, is just out of this world.
He told me that he's a master of stripatsu.
Stripatsu, yes. I only get into fights at the mill stream. That's why I perfected
like,
my art.
He's like, listen, what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit you in the chest, and then if you take five steps away from my mom's apartment, that's when you collapse and die.
I can only win. I fight in this Italian style called Inatsu, and it's where I fight strippers outside of the parking lot when they don't pay me my money for the weed that they smoke for free.
I know an Italian martial art called Gabagool, and I come and I get you.
He told me about all the people he's fought and that he's killed, but there's never any police reports or any word of people that he's killed. He just
oh my god,
never
okay.
happens.
Hand to God, hand to God, I'm serious. When I saw the footage at the Capitol and the guy in like the barbarian horns, the cleric looking dude, I was like, oh my God. For a second, I thought that was Restivo with a beard. I was like, oh shit.
Yes, he's
he
finally
did it.
And hey, by the way,
I really thought it was Rob Creamer.
Hey, Rob, I'll let you in on some. First of all, Chris Restivo, I answer every time he calls if I'm available. Okay, it's very rare I don't answer a phone call from Chris
Which
Restivo.
Which hurts because I know there are times Eric has not taken my.
I haven't.
Calls.
I was like, because listen, the potential of a Chris Restivo call is so high. Okay, it's so high. The level of what I'm going to hear. I strap in. I sometimes have to sit down. I have to put a seatbelt on in a recliner because I think my ass is going to fly out of the goddamn roof with the things that he says.
It's like one of those Maxwell commercials. Yes, sitting in front of the stereo, and you're just.
Hey, Chris Restivo's latest bit. All right, it's not even a bit. This is Chris Restivo's real thing that he wants to do. He says that he wants to, since Trump has lost, that he needs to run for office. And I've done nothing but encourage him. I was like, he was just like, I'm either going to be president or mayor. And I love that he set the bar like from here to here. He's like, I'm going to be the mayor or this. And I'm like, okay, cool. Mayor of where? I didn't even ask. I was just like,
I'm either going to be president or comptroller of Howard County. One of the two. It's going to happen.
It's basically the same thing. After you're in there, you pretty much have all the power. And so I've been encouraging Chris to start a GoFundMe so he can start his political roots, which Chris then sent me like a paragraph and a half of his policy, which is clearly something he like copied and pasted off of some other right-wing website, but at the end of it there was clearly like Chris putting his own notes on it. He's like, this is pretty perfect, but at the end it says also bars are open till 4 o'clock every night. So he wants to. That was
4 p.m.
Yeah, no, 4 a.m. every night. They need to be open past the 2 o'clock in Maryland. So that's part of his platform, which I thought was very, very funny to me.
I keep telling him that he'll never win unless he's black, and I keep encouraging him to go blackface.
Oh my God! Please
yes,
stop.
Yes, so. Please.
But he doesn't. He doesn't act black enough. So I keep you know. Encouraging him how to act more black.
So did you send him lots of like Tiger Woods videos and stuff like that? Like his way to
no, like Will Smith gangster rap songs.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense. Just don't understand.
I'm gonna start a political action committee called Chris Restivo for Assistant President or Crap. It's gonna be the best thing ever.
That would fucking rock. Oh gosh. So and that's gonna bring us to an end of episode one of Remo Williams. Yes, we made a two-parter out of this wonderful piece of trash cinema. So you have to join us next week. You catch Christopher Lawrence on all the social media and all that crap, but C-Law, like Claw Comedy. It's on all the platforms. All things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Ashley Pontius at ashleypontiuslaughs.com. There's a second Saturday shit show. Check out our merch store, though. The Woodworth Quality Time Brothers Emporium. There you go. I got it. Jeremy, take us out. He was Asian.
I've got skeebies and lice crawling everywhere. I'm living on the street, but that's okay, 'cause I just saw the midgets.
Midgets!
It's alright, 'cause I just saw the midgets.
Midgets!
Guardian angel showed me how much life is better.
down this function. My mom won't even say hello to me, even my grandma. She hates me too, but anyway, just all a midget. Now everything's alright, yeah, just all a midget. And everything's alright because midgets are happiness. Midgets are happiness. I'm on the streets now. I'm selling drugs. I went to jail. Sucking dicks left and right. I'm getting raped, yeah. 8 days a week. But that's okay, cause I just saw a midget today in jail. Cause I'm midget on happiness. Midget on happiness. Yeah.